Detritus affected. Physicians swear a Hippocratic oath whose central vow is, do no harm. I wonder, how many other professions might do well to set that goal above all others? Schliemann, uncovering Troy, gave birth to modern archaeology, begetting it in sin. His clumsy pits tore through the gates and temples of 40 levels, 3,000 years, callously scattering what might have been sifted, deciphered, all to prove a fact that wasn't going anywhere. Patience would have revealed the same truth in time. The next wave of diggers learned from Schliemann's wrongs. They went about restoring ancient sites, sweeping dust from Disney prim aisles of artfully restacked columns. Such conceit. Today, we save dust, sampling pollen grains to tell what blossoms once grew on the hills surrounding Karakoram, or Harappa, or fabled Nineveh. In truth, we have conceits all our own. Friday. Look, see this broken plastic wheel? Part of a cheap toy circa 1970. Giveaway prize in some fast food outlet's promotional kiddie meal. 70 grams of carboniferous petroleum cooked under limestone sediments for 200 million years, only to be sucked up, refined, press molded, passed across a counter, squealed over, and then tossed in next week's trash. And here's a flattened cardboard box bearing the logo of a long-defunct stereo store, stained on one side by a mass of nondescript organic matter which we'll analyze later in the lab, sampling and correlating what garbage once flew between these hills. Hills overlooking fabulous L.A. Science, and especially archaeology, is never ideal, Professor Paul used to tell us. In the present as well as the past, real life is all about compromises. Not as lofty a slogan as a Hippocratic oath, I'll admit, but what do you expect from a profession based on rooting through the cellars, garbage heaps, and vanities of bygone days? We managed to dig down past the 30-meter level this week, into rich veins of profligacy from a time that knew no limits. It is a smorgasbord feast of information, and I want to analyze everything. Each gum wrapper, each crushed styrofoam peanut and brown ketchup stain. I fantasize computers potent enough to work backward from the positions I find each of these wonders in, tracing how they came to be jammed next to each other under this great pile. I dream of reversing their tumble from grunting, stinking dump trucks, re-enveloping them in wrappers of shiny black plastic, and following each bundle back to its source, the effluent of a single 20th century home. It can't be done. Not today. It would be like asking Schliemann to sift for pollen instead of ripping through ancestral walls in search of gold. Perhaps future researchers will dissolve ancient cities atom by atom, recording the location and orientation of each molecule so that the dust of pharaoh, slave, and temple cat might be tagged, trajectoried, and finally reassembled on a chip like God's own jigsaw puzzle, resurrecting the dead in simulated splendor, if not the hoped-for afterlife. My techniques are crude in comparison to what may come. Only a minuscule portion of the raw data we dig up is captured on photos, slides, and these journal entries. Slash and burn archaeology, Keoki called it last week in black humor. Yet each evening when the day's work is done, I climb out of our trench to look across the vast expanse that is Hyperion, and am consoled. Our trench is just 50 meters by 14, while the landfill stretches in all directions. Mile after mile of garbage. The largest midden. The largest single thing ever built by human civilization. Bigger by volume than even China's Great Wall. There'll be plenty left over after we're through digging here. Plenty of data for others to plumb through later with fine future sieves. I'm no Schliemann. I do little harm. Monday. Sometimes an object strikes me in a certain way, and I wonder, could this have once been mine? I am bemused by how different that makes this research from any other I've done. My own father or mother might have thrown out this box, that sofa or old turntable back when I was very young. The thought makes me sensitive to toys, pathetic broken bits of plastic and metal. They grow less electronic and more sturdy with each meter we descend into the past, affecting me with something between déjà vu and a poignant sense of lost innocence. Then my beeping pager interrupts, and I must climb back to the present world dealing with the latest crisis. Never have I faced so much political aggravation on a dig. Each day some old fart bureaucrat comes on site, scratching his head and muttering confused objections. Even the infamous red tape of India pales in comparison. There, or in Egypt, you could smooth things over with a little honest backsheesh. Here, a bribe would just land me in jail without ever discovering what it is these people want. One learns to be resourceful. Always, in every government department, one can find some bright youngster who is off the formal chain of command. The idea boy, troubleshooter gal. This techie plays no office games, but simply makes things run. Boss is usually terrified of Wonder Kid, so I invite them up together, all moon-wrapped in full breathing gear against the occasional methane blurp. They get a full cook's tour. Nearly always the young guy goes crazy over something we found, leaves with an armload of gamma-sanitized memorabilia, and makes damn sure we get our permit, license, whatever. Works every time. It's been much the same with the press. One curmudgeon city editor had it in for us from the moment our department got this grant. Tried angling stories about disease germs festering in the dump along with 5 billion ancient disposable diapers. Radio DJs and net jockeys came to our rescue. So effectively, the cops had to cordon off Sanitation Road, keeping out hordes of young amateurs who flocked up to help out. Los Angeles. Who can figure? Some old-time rocker once said, "No place is ever weirder than your own native land." Maybe that's why, after years exploring the past far away, I finally came back home to dig. Wednesday. Inch by inch we descend, uncovering mundane wonders. For example, we keep finding newspapers so well preserved they could even be read by moonlight. So much for biodegradability. No archaeologist ever had better help dating strata. Household mail is a rich font of information. Charge slips and bank records found their way into the trash along with old tax files and all kinds of revealing junk mail. When my student Joyce Barnes released some wonderful stats on Twen Sen credit slavery, a retiree group in Laguna filed suit under some old privacy laws in an effort to stop the dig. That storm blew over for lack of public support. Today's kids hardly know what an envelope is. If it's not in the net, what do they care? Meanwhile, Leslie surveys dietary patterns of Angelino's past. When we penetrated beyond the era of microwave ovens, he found a sudden shift in the packaging poisons found in ready-to-heat food residue. The Department of Urban Pathology at UCLA has expressed keen interest in this work. Zola chose to study the replacement threshold, at which point it used to be more price-effective to throw out a machine than repair it. Nothing better typifies the subject era than the sight of countless appliances, from TVs to dishwashers to stereos, all tossed because newer, better models cost less than a technician might charge to find a burnt transistor. Kiyoki pays the freight, testing rich veins of complex organics and heavy metals for our industrial sponsor. It's a long shot, but if the assay proves out, Fabrique Chang may bid to come mine Hyperion. One generation's junk can be the next smother load. So much for all that talk earlier about setting fields aside for future archaeologists. Maybe it's human nature to spoil what we strive to comprehend. Maybe we're all Schliemann under the skin. Oh, don't be so cynical, Joe boy. It's late. Put away the journal and go to bed. Tomorrow is another day. Friday. By now I thought we'd wrestled every county, state, and federal agency from public health to Indian affairs, but I never expected to be stopped dead by the coroner's office. Zola found the bones down at South 22, a neat row of ribs sticking through a pile of dingy rags. At first we thought it was a pet, some large dog. On realizing they were human, we had no choice but to report it. We're digging in strata from 1958 AD, after all. It might be someone's long-missing great-uncle. What a mess. Reporters and detectives trampling through the pit, hot lights reviving dormant aromatics, making the place stink to Sheol, yellow police tape stretching back and forth in a confusing maze. Fortunately, some of the cops seem competent and sympathetic. I watched as one young homicide investigator worked delicately with a brush and evidence kit. I couldn't help kibitzing about the effects of time and anaerobic chemistry on fingerprints. Finally, perhaps to shut me up, Lieutenant Starling invited me through the cordon to help. Turns out our jobs have interesting overlaps, and even more interesting quirky differences. Afterward, we cleaned up and talked shop until late. Her profession seems narrowly focused from my point of view, but I can relate. We're both in the business of piecing together clues, reading hidden stories. This morning, the lieutenant overruled her gruff sergeant to let us resume work at the north end, while her crew keeps fussing down south. It's hard not to be bothered by all the commotion nearby, but I exhibit calm concentration for the sake of the team. We are professional time travelers, after all, privileged to visit the past. No distraction should make us forget our jobs. Sunday. At a pace that makes glaciers seem juggernauts, the Earth's Pacific plate grinds alongside the North American plate. Unlike the head-on collision shoving up the Himalayas, this glancing blow makes modest mountains. Where Hyperion now squats once lay a gentle valley where mule deer grazed and condors soared. Quite recently, in geologic time, the Shoshone discovered a rough paradise here. Then, in an eye blink, Spaniards came to graze their cattle. Hopalong Cassidy filmed exploits where I stand each day, or rather many meters lower down, where molder the smothered roots of ancient oaks. When burgeoning Los Angeles engulfed these hills, little upland valleys like these seemed ideal sites for dumping refuse. Regiments of trucks came and went day in and day out, their way lit by torches burning off methane gas as buried garbage fermented. More matter moved here in just 1 year than Rome put into its roads. More than was shifted for canals at Suez or Panama. Then, sooner than anyone predicted, a flat plain stretched between former peaks, and the trucks had to move on. Nowadays, the gas gets piped away. You can't build on this kind of unsteady fill, so no one expected visitors to this abandoned place, despite its poetical name. Not until slow processes turned detritus into a new kind of stone. Then we arrived to dig and pry. No human trait ever stirred up such trouble as curiosity. Monday. Detective Starling finished her investigation. Her report, inconclusive except to say the bones date from the time of the surrounding stratum. Net tabloids are rife with speculation about gangland executions. Artists' renderings show mobsters ceremoniously interring their victim beneath a sea of waste. Getting the dates all wrong, someone nicknamed the skeleton Jimmy H. Unfortunately for sensationalists, there were no obvious signs of foul play. That didn't keep some of the police brass from trying to shut us down. But Helen Starling saw no legal cause and refused to sign the order. So we're back in business. After a decent interval, I must find a good way to thank her. Tuesday. The day after work resumed, I found a strange note in my mailbox. Scrawled on real paper in a thin, cramped style, it simply read, "Leave it be." Some kook, I guess. Why should anyone care about a half dozen eggheads scratching around in garbage? Wednesday. Europeans laugh when Americans speak of history. As for Los Angeles, you can find every nationality on Earth within 10 minutes of downtown, but each draws its heritage from somewhere else. Here in the world city, everyone is rootless, and often glad to be cut loose from the past. Besides, who needs to dig in order to know this place? L.A.'s story is well documented in newspaper files, ledgers, videotape. Was any culture ever so self-involved? Books on current slang and pop culture come out every year. As they say about pornography, nothing is left to the imagination. Still, there is something special about the layers we visit. They represent a time and place unlike any other, when people remade reality in new garish colors, unrestrained by precedent, towering creativity mixed with profound stupor. Rock bands and symphony orchestras, stench and stainless steel. Nothing compares save Renaissance Florence, also the object of scorn, hatred, and ultimately envy. Someday people may romanticize Twin Sen L.A. as they do the time of Michelangelo. And pigs might fly? They do. One Angelino took his pet Porker hang gliding. I have the newspaper in front of me, circa 1978. What a place. Thursday. No time for a personal entry tonight. Today's big discovery, this time at South 31. Four more sets of bones. Friday. My, what a fuss. They're still hollering downtown, but the upshot is obvious. They need expert help, and the only place to find skilled hands quickly is right here on site. I'm sitting quietly, twiddling my thumbs till they ask. Saturday. They asked. Helen gave us a one-day cram course on how to be junior crime scene investigators, then deputized and put us to work. Since then, it's been slow going, but we're used to that. Only big difference is we don't have to watch our budget, agonizing over what to put in labeled plastic bags and what to discard. Near the bodies, we save everything. Everybody in the world wants to come to Hyperion. The crowd control cordon stretches miles. Helicopters buzz along with scores of whirring autocams sent over by newsy mags and hobbyists. Police drones snap up those straying too close. Still, it's quite a din. The press is calling it Jimmy's Pit. Reporters scan old missing person files like bloodhounds, eager to break the story of the year, who the victims were, why they were dumped here, and who might have done it. The city is having a wonderful time. Well, not everybody. I found another note last night on coming home. Stop it now, the scrawled piece of paper read, before you regret it. Too late, whoever you are. Events now have their own momentum. Tomorrow we start lateral holes, expanding the trench in case one or two more bodies might lie buried nearby. Funny what bothers you at a time like this. Amid all this furor, what bugs me is the coincidence. How unlikely it was that we should have randomly chosen a site directly over Jimmy and company. To a scientist, and a detective, I suppose, coincidence is an awfully suspicious thing. Monday. Zola was in tears when she reported finding the child. A 5-year-old, judging from the little bones. This time the clothing was well preserved. A pink and blue print dress. We all stared as Kiyoki and a police pathologist worked. That was when we realized this was no gangland dumping ground. Half an hour later, Leslie gave a shout. He had found another pair of skeletons. Then suddenly it seemed diggers were yelling from all sides. Autocams began colliding overhead as newsies dove in for pics, and we scurried from one set of remains to the next. In minutes, word flashed across the net to every continent. Massacre in L.A. Tomorrow, over my protests, Helen brings in bulldozers. Ah, Schliemann. Tuesday. For a time during the Second World War, the city of Los Angeles mandated compulsory recycling. Materials of all kinds were needed for the effort, from glass and metals to paper and baking fat. Nothing is wasted when you pay heed to the true value of things. Very little refuse wound up coming to Hyperion during those years. Then, with the war fading into memory, a candidate ran for mayor on a crowd-pleasing platform, promising to repeal the inconvenient law. He won handily. Curbside recycling ended, and the trucks began rolling as never before, by the ton, by hundreds and thousands of tons. In a few years, an average family might throw away a volume of material equal to their home. A new disposable way of life seemed ordained forever. Archaeologists could have told them, nothing lasts forever. The golden age of Athens waxed and passed away again within a single human lifespan. So did the age of waste. The world won't soon forget, either. According to the Indian Bones Act, any remains less than 1,000 years old aren't specimens, but someone's ancestor. You need the local tribe's permission before digging near a burial ground, and must reinter all unearthed bones with honors. Fair enough, but I never thought I'd see the act applied to this project. Today, while yellow machines peeled away detritus for a bigger trench, lawyers arrived with injunctions to halt the desecration of graves. Turns out they were fronting for the same bunch of retirees who tried to stop us earlier. Don't those people have better things to do with their time? The dozers stopped for just 3 hours. Then the stay was overruled and digging resumed. I stood around watching machines tear through layers it had taken us months to penetrate with brush and trowel. Wonderful items kept popping into view, only to vanish into hoppers and be carried away. I stopped Kiyoki and Les from chasing between flashing backhoe blades, plucking enticing tidbits. Without careful photography and provenance, none of it would provide useful data. So I set them to work tarping over the north end of the old trench, preserving it from contamination. I'm making this entry with my portable. We've set up a pressurized tent and sleeping quarters, partly because work continues round the clock now, and partly because each of us has had anonymous death threats. Zola's house was vandalized, and someone fired a shot through Les's window. We voted to stay together on site till it all blows over. Friday. Helen called the dozers off as we neared early 50 strata. An army of muscular cops waded in under our direction and soon hit bones. And more bones. More than we can count by searchlight, all mixed in with old boxes and bed springs, melon rinds and tea bags, newspapers and candy wrappers. Rib cages, vertebrae, femurs, grinning skulls. Lieutenant Starling ordered a halt for coffee to let people catch their breath. That's when word spread about the theory. Seems the idea's been crisscrossing the net all evening, but we hadn't heard till half the world agreed it must be the explanation. When you think about it, none other fits. The 1950s was an era of frantic building in Southern California. Inevitably, greedy developers took shortcuts. If an old graveyard stood in the way, you were supposed to move the bodies and markers with due care, but often the whole mass was just scooped up and dumped in a pit somewhere. And what better pit than Hyperion Landfill? A few bribes, some turned heads. Within days, layers of new garbage would hide the evidence. Besides, who was harmed? It's remarkable how calming a good theory can be. What had verged on panic now seems placid as people wander back to work at a slower pace. There is talk of wrapping it all up tomorrow, after all. I keep my misgivings to myself. Somehow, it all seems too pat. Saturday. It didn't wash, not even for a day. Oh, for a time, headlines blared. Dump of death mystery solved. Big shots came down and posed next to the bulldozers, anointing the graveyard dumping theory and announcing that, while this had all been a nice, diverting summertime distraction, it was time to stop wasting taxpayers' money on a minor crime whose statute of limitations ran out before most living citizens were born. Time to let the dead rest in peace. The old farts seemed in an awful hurry to put all this behind them. Some of the young beat reporters said their editors were hastily reassigning them. All told, things smelled pretty fishy. We sat around pondering. Suppose some greedy bastards did once gather up the bodies in a cemetery, trucking them off to make room for houses or a shopping mall. That's plausible. But think, what shape would the remains be in after tumbling together in a hole? I could testify to that, having excavated ancient battlegrounds where armies of Xerxes or Teng Ho buried their dead in haste before the sun could rise. The skeletons here in Hyperion look nothing like those jumbled boneyards. Each one is coherent, whole, and they come spread across an area far too wide for the convenient dumping theory to explain. We agreed unanimously. We're going back out tonight, orders or no orders. Thursday. Helen Starling says her boys found the guy who set fire to my garage. I couldn't have been more surprised to learn it was old Mr. Hansen down the block. Here I'd been expecting some cabal of fundamentalist loonies to be behind the threats and vandalism against my people, but in each case it's been individual action by someone they knew. No visible connection between the perpetrators, except their advanced age. It's all very, very weird. Haven't made a diary entry in some time. I always thought it part of being a careful scientist, like keeping good field notes. But what we're doing hasn't been science for a long time. To recap, the bigwigs were horrified to learn we had resumed digging. While they slept, we managed to double the excavation. They then dithered, went back to their offices, made phone calls, and issued orders, and we doubled it again. By the time judges signed restraints and had them delivered, the whole chain of command lay in ruins. No cop on the beat was going to enforce a halt. There were skeletons everywhere. Big ones, men in their prime. Smaller ones, women, children, little babies. None showed discernible traces of violent death. No sign they had ever been moved after burial. The cemetery dumping scenario evaporated in smoke, never to be raised again. We kept working shifts, digging, loading trucks, hauling the dross of 50 years away to the far end of Hyperion, though some suspect even that step might prove temporary. For the most part, we worked silently, though each of us knows what ferment is crossing the airwaves. A ferment of newer, more imaginative theories. There is talk of death squads like they've had from time to time in South America, with vigilantes scouring the city for undesirables and burying their victims in the dump. Credible, perhaps, if they had killed dozens, even hundreds, but no way in the numbers we are finding. The same goes for satanic or cannibalistic cults. More colorful notions involve everything from extraterrestrial vivisections to a lost underground civilization. One fellow suggests that something about the specific gravity of bones causes them to migrate through garbage, though where they came from in the first place he has no idea. My favorite idea of the current crop is spontaneous calcification. It is based on homeopathy. The notion that all objects carry the imprint of any other object that was ever in contact with them. And what did every single object in Hyperion landfill have in common? Every one was touched countless times by human beings. Next, throw in a crackpot reversal of fossilization, the process by which groundwater leaches calcium from bones and replaces it with the stuff of rock, and you've got an idea that would have surely made it to the New Age bestseller list back in my parents' generation. Leave trash alone long enough, and it starts precipitating out skeletons. In other words, garbage recapitulates its makers. We are what we waste. A fine, maniacal notion. I don't dismiss it lightly. Or are they metaphors? Perhaps guilt festers and makes tangible a city's crimes. What, after all, did we do to the homeless, the forgotten, those spilled out of mental hospitals to fend on their own? In effect, we threw them away. The malnourished, the ill-educated, the drug-racked and brain-wounded. We threw out all the possibilities they might have brought to light with strong hands and minds, just as surely as those big trucks carried off all else inconvenient and disposable. I look back on Persia, China, India, wherever I dug and found middens of bones, thinking them burial grounds of real people. Perhaps the same thing happened there as well. In each culture, shame may have leaked from the living, seeping underground to wherever lost hopes go, congealing into hideous shape within the ground. No, no, I have felt the bones in my hands. They are real, stretching away in all directions. They were once draped in flesh. I know it. People are welcome to their crackpot theories, but all metaphysics aside, something happened here. Something terrible. September. Nobody is bothering with police cordons anymore. Everyone and anyone is welcome to come up to Hyperion to help dig. Sometimes it seems half the population under 50 must be here, assisting with the excavation, browsing through the detritus, carting things away. It looks like a scene from a fantastic D.W. Griffith epic about the construction of the pyramids, only on a vaster scale. Here, under only the loosest of direction, a mob, a horde, a civilization labors amidst dust and stink to undo the greatest single edifice built by their ancestors, taking it apart by hand and hauling the bits off in trucks, cars, wheelbarrows. What our grandparents created here, what they buried, is fast growing apparent and they don't like it. They wander among us, old folks, confused, distracted, grabbing us by the sleeve and begging us to stop. When questioned, none of them can explain why. Tearfully, they just say that it's wrong, that we must leave it be. It's the same with officials, politicians, judges. The eldest issue pronouncements, file writs. We ignore them and dig on, uncovering layer after layer of the dead. A million skeletons so far, with no end in sight. Reports come in from other cities, of landfill boneyards in New York, Atlanta, Seattle, though none as extensive or dating so far back as Los Angeles. Perhaps that means it happened first and most profoundly here in L.A. But what? What happened here? Whence came the dead? Zola claims the skulls are different from ours. She points to a slight statistical difference in the shape of the occipital lobe. They were more like Neanderthals than we are, she says with the eagerness of a proselyte. They would have been more intuitive, more empathetic beings. Les and I think all this must have driven her over the edge. None of us can see any difference worth getting excited over. On the other hand, maybe we don't want to see. Any difference that held true would support the scariest theory, that we are all murderers, that we're invaders, that the true rightful denizens of L.A. lay buried where our grandparents put them after slaying them one by one in the course of taking over their city, their lives. The fact that the idea comes straight out of classic sci-fi doesn't repudiate it. The paranoid films of those days may reflect an instinctual terror felt by those who saw no difference in their friends and family, but somehow knew them for replacements, doppelgangers, somehow knew their own turn was coming. It might explain why old folks act the way they do. Deep inside, at some inner core, they are still aliens. Long ago, they adopted the memories, behavior, attitudes of the Angelinos they replaced, becoming passionate Democrats, Republicans, junkies, and Zen Buddhists. But deep down, part of them still knows what they are. But we, their descendants, were born thinking ourselves human, if a bit strange for living in this bizarre city. We grew up glorying in quirky ideas, wild individuality, diversity, cool, and most of all the novel notion that weird is no four-letter word. If someone killed 2 million Angelinos, our first instinct is pure, ironic. To avenge them. October. There is another theory. We might simply have thrown them all away. The bodies, I mean. Just the bodies. They were ours, and we exchanged them, traded them in, got new models, threw out the old. Why not? It suits our style. Despite all the conservation laws passed for harder times, despite draconian recycling, despite a soaring cost of living caused by wastrel days, we still think basically the same. Like magpies, we'll try whatever's shiny, new. What if someone once made our grandparents an offer they couldn't refuse? Sign here and I'll show you how to molt and be reborn livelier, more interesting people. Do this and your city will soar heights, explore depths no other has known. Only in order to trade up, you must forget this pact. Forget the husks you shed. Toss them in the trash along with this week's newspapers, detergent boxes, TV dinner trays. Toss them out and live. I wonder about the fine print. Would Angelenos even stop to read it in their rush to sign? I also wonder if I'm going mad. Winter. Hyperion is deep, deeper than we ever imagined. Yet slowly, inexorable, it empties itself of all we had put there. Where the detritus is taken, I don't know, only that it climbs 100 trails out of this valley by machine, by human back, sometimes in a floating haze that seems to scale the dusty hills without aid. Like a superfluid, like some entity awakened, the waste departs, spilling from a container unable to hold it any longer. Our dross, our toys, our broken machine servants, our used wrappers. How could we ever think the bonds linking us to our things could be broken simply by throwing them away? Destiny firmly connects the maker and the made, user and used, creation and creator. So it was in the myths of Ur and Thebes, so it always shall be. We never really threw our things away, we just put them down for a while. Now they are coming home. Millennium. Picked clean, it holds a certain sterile beauty. A valley of bare, trampled clay between steep hills. Bare clay covered with 4 million skeletons, the only man-made things now left behind. It makes a pretty scene, Hyperion Boneyard. Peaceful. All the hordes are gone. Just a few of us remain, sitting around, waiting. Things are happening just over the rim where Los Angeles can be heard fast turning into something different again. By now, one theory or another must have proven true, or else no one cares anymore about past truths. So involved are they in rapid changes, merging the reclaimed into what's shiny new. But some of us stay in Hyperion, fed from time to time by kindly visitors. We wait, keeping vigil for others who cannot. Sometimes it rains. Bones sink slowly into the softening mud. Full of nutrients, I hear, bones are. They belong in good earth. Yesterday I thought I saw a condor winging near the sun. Yes, yes, I know things are going on elsewhere. I'll go take part again, really, soon as I've rested. Thought a few things out. Seen events through to their conclusion. I'll just stay a little while longer and watch the first oaks grow.